It's PFT Live for this Thursday. I'm still in Stamford, Connecticut, and well, it's been a grind this week. 3 hours on the Dan Patrick Show, jump in the car, get here, sprint to the studio, and off we go for some football-only talk. It's been a lot of football talk on the Dan Patrick Show this week, but only football talk here today and the talk of the football world. The two top running backs on the Pittsburgh Steelers depth chart, Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount, arrested while... I don't know whether it was arrested, detained, pulled over, cited, charged, whatever. Driving in a car and the odor, the pungent odor of marijuana wafting into the nasal cavity of, I almost got that without screwing up, nasal cavity of a police officer who was on a motorcycle. That's how they got caught. That's how they got pulled over. They now face the accusation of marijuana possession. They've admitted to it reportedly. And also Le'Veon Bell, the starting running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, facing DUI charges on top of that. Steelers left Bell behind. Pittsburgh plays at Philadelphia tonight. Bell made it to Philly on his own dime, hopefully dime bag. That's not good. Hopefully he didn't drive that same car with the Cheech and Chong stink to it on the path from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh. Just a bizarre situation. I can't recall a time where two players from the same team were arrested at the same time. I definitely don't recall two players who play the same position being arrested at the same time, two players from the same team at the same position. Just a bizarre situation for Bell and Blount. And, you know, what it reinforces, the idea that under the substance abuse policy, the players don't get tested all the time randomly. They have one random test between April 20, yes, 420, and early August. Once they've taken that test, unless you're already in the substance abuse program, you don't get tested again. You can smoke them if you got them, and the only way you're going to get in trouble is if you're smoking them in a car with the windows rolled down and a cop is rolling by and the odor of that burning leaf enters the nasal cavity. I keep screwing it up. Nasal cavity of that police officer who happens to be on that motorbike. Pretty good nose to pick it up or a lot of marijuana being smoked. Either way, here's how this plays out. The Steelers could take matters into their own hands. They did this in 2008 with Santonio Holmes, former receiver, now recently signed with the Bears. The Steelers suspended him with pay, essentially. They deactivated him for a game against the New York Giants. Steelers lost that game, went on to win the Super Bowl. Holmes was the Super Bowl MVP that year. Technically, this falls under the jurisdiction of the NFL, and discipline will be available after the case is resolved. For marijuana possession, usually it's a one-game suspension. Now, Bell, for a first offense DUI, would be facing two game checks on top of that as a fine. The other issue with the marijuana possession could result in an additional suspension for the DUI because you've got multiple violations of the substance abuse policy. And the other reality is both players will most likely be put into the testing program where they're subject to up to 10 tests per month, not that one per year between April 20 and early August. But either way, not a good situation for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And no opportunity to take a stand on principle because they need the players to play tonight in the preseason to chew up the reps and see who should get the reps when the regular season begins on September 7 against the Cleveland Browns. So for a change, we're not talking about the Browns. We're talking about a couple of Steelers, a couple of key pieces of that offense. Blount looked great in the postseason and week 17 for the Patriots last year. Who gets the opportunities if both guys get in trouble? And will the Steelers do anything about it? I think week one of the regular season, two players at a key position, I think the Steelers are going to find a way to look the other way. The 49ers would like to look the other way based upon the quality of the turf at the Field of Genes. And look, great stadium, bells and whistles, Wi-Fi capability so that everybody at the game can simultaneously log on. It's almost unheard of. I think it is unheard of as far as major stadiums go. But they forgot about the grass, according to Matt Maiocco of CSN Bay Area, who will be joining us later in the program. Problem with the turf caused Coach Jim Harbaugh to yank the team off the field. GM Trent Baalke upset, guys slipping and sliding, potential hazard there. And oh, by the way, they play the Chargers this Sunday on that field. They played this past weekend, the 49ers did against the Denver Broncos. Not a good sign. I know you'd like to keep alive the traditions of Candlestick Park at the new venue. The quality of the turf, because it was very often not good quality Candlestick Park. You don't want to bring that down to Santa Clara. And it you know, with all the obsession over pushing the envelope, the new stadium, the swanky technology, the old school stuff that is important to, you know, playing a football game gets lost in the cracks. It feels like Josh Gordon's got lost in the cracks. It's been 17 days. I don't know what a reasonable time is. Remember, that's the standard. After the hearing officer finishes the hearing, two-day hearing on the question of whether or not Josh Gordon's going to be suspended for a full year. That was August 4. Today is August 21. If my math is correct, and it rarely is, that's a 17-day lag. The rule is reasonable time. I don't think it's reasonable. Look, are they waiting to put together this 25-page single-spaced opinion that's going to talk about why Josh Gordon should be suspended for a year based upon 2 days of testimony? Just issue a one-liner and then follow it up with the opinion when the opinion is ready, because the Browns need to know what's going on here, people. The NFL, you need to let the Browns know, because if it's a one-year suspension, it's 365 days, full year. That means as of today. If it happens today, and I think the more accurate guess is tomorrow at 4:59 p.m. Eastern time, Josh Gordon wouldn't be available until 1 year from that moment, if he can stay clean, if he can pass up to 10 drug tests per month. It's just, it's horribly unfair to the team, to the player. It's very fair to whoever has to compete with the Browns this year. It's fair to the Steelers, Ravens, and Bengals. But for the Browns, we've known about this since May. They have to expedite the process when you're talking about a full-year banishment from the NFL. Expedite the process, get it done. It really is getting to the point of shameful now that it's taken this long, 17 days. Harold Henderson, the hearing officer, had to have known the moment the hearing ended what he was going to do. He didn't have to go back and pour over the transcripts. You know which way you want to go. You know what the law is. You know what the rule is. He does these all the time. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I think it's wrong. Regardless of whether he's suspended or not, it's wrong for it to last this long. Let's go ahead and issue a ruling, NFL. Let's do it today. Let's do it right now. You know what it's going to be. Let's do it. And if you're going to squeeze the NFL, the league office, the representatives, and Josh Gordon into an 8-game bottom line agreed-to suspension, just get it done. It's not fair to the team. It creates frustrations. It creates uncertainty. And it just creates a sense that the NFL doesn't have its act together. I've managed to get my act together because even though we started a little bit late, I finished the first segment on time. When we come back, we're going to delve a little more deeply into the NFL's version of Cheech and Chong, Le'Veon Bell, LeGarrette Blount. Ed Bouchette, who was not in that vehicle, allegedly or actually, will be joining us. He covers the Pittsburgh Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And then the aforementioned, I always loved that word, aforementioned Matt Maiocco of CSN Bay Area to get us up to speed on the 49ers. A little sense of panic given the performance of the 49ers. And then you throw on top of it the problems with the turf, the wheels coming off for the 49ers. We'll find out. We'll talk to Matt to wrap the show. Before that, Ed Bouchette. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. An otherwise slow Wednesday night picked up quickly with the news that Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount were arrested for marijuana possession. Bell also for DUI. And creates some issues for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Joining us now to help us break them all down, Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, winner of this year's Dick McCann Award, given out by the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Ed, first of all, congratulations on the award. Second of all, what in the world's going on with Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount?
The Cheech and Chong of the Steelers' backfield, Mike. The whole circumstance just has the big S labeled on it. Stupid. I mean, these guys are so dumb for doing what they did. Everybody knows. They know. If you're not in the program, you don't get tested until next April now, and they could do it in the quiet of their own homes. But they're out. They practiced until 12 o'clock on Wednesday. Their flight's supposed to leave at 2:30. Sometime between then, 1:30 is when they were pulled over. They're up there. They got the window down, and they're smoking, apparently, and it's going out the window, and the cop on a motorcycle smells it. It's just dumb, dumb, dumb. That's what it was.
And so what do we do going forward? What do the Steelers do? I know they left Bell behind. He got to Philadelphia on his own dime. Will there be any discipline imposed by the Steelers on Bell or Blount?
I don't think they're going to do it this time. You know, they did it to Santonio Holmes a number of years ago. But that was in the middle of the season, in the middle of the week, and they paid him. They didn't suspend him. They just told him not to bother coming back until after the next game. And Mike Tomlin called it a disruption, and that's why he did not you know, they couldn't do it. It's in the hands of the commissioner, these kinds of things, and I think that's where the Steelers are going to let him handle it. And as you know, suspensions, if he does it, usually don't come for another year, and it's usually on these kind of things only one game.
Yeah, that's right. For marijuana possession, the standard penalty is one game. It comes after the case is resolved, and typically the way that the court system moves, it would be for week one of the 2015 season when Blount may not even be on the team, and if anything, it probably hurts his chances of being back with the Steelers next year because you can't have both those guys at the top of the depth chart and have them both unavailable for the first game of the regular season. You know, the Steelers have been quiet when it comes to off-field issues. I know there was an incident a couple of years ago with Alameda Ta'amu, who now plays for the Arizona Cardinals. Overall, though, what's the level of renegade or lawbreaker on the Pittsburgh Steelers? Is this a sign that there may be other issues, or are these guys the aberration?
Well, you know, Ryan Clark in February, Mike, came out and told ESPN that some of his teammates smoke marijuana. It was on the big issue of marijuana in the NFL, and some of his teammates took umbrage maybe to the fact he just said it, not that it was true or not. I think it's true for most NFL teams. Now, I haven't seen, you mentioned Ta'amu. They cut Chris Rainey because he was involved in a couple, again, stupid off-the-field stuff, and I see the Colts cut him again. And there have been a couple others through the years, but really nothing big other than the Ben Roethlisberger stuff, which he was never charged with a crime. So I don't think they're turning into a den of thieves and inequity, if you will. But you know, this kind of stuff. And I'm wondering if they're thinking now, is LeGarrette Blount have too much influence on the young Le'Veon Bell?
And that's a great point because they need Le'Veon Bell to develop into that workhorse running back. Dre Archer is going to have a different role. LeGarrette Blount was great down the stretch for the Patriots. How do you see the depth chart shaking out for the Steelers, and will this incident affect it in any way?
I don't think it will affect it. I think they can't. They don't have anybody else. Unless they deem this to be worse than it is, or LeGarrette Blount, if he has that kind of influence on him, I don't know. But, you know, they have three halfbacks, Mike, Bell, LeGarrette Blount, and rookie Dre Archer. And they have a fullback slash tight end slash H-back, Will Johnson. And I think that's all they were going to go with in their backfield because none of these other guys have done anything, and they're happy with those four, I think. So I can't see them like replacing like Blount with one of these young guys or adding one of these young guys. They also have to make up for a long snapper the first couple of days because they lost Greg Warren with a leg injury. He's going to miss the first game or so. So they have to carry an extra body there.
You mentioned Santonio Holmes earlier. He did have that incident in 2008. Went on to win the Super Bowl MVP award later that season, had over 1,200 receiving yards in 2009. You've seen him when he's at his best. He signed with the Bears recently. If he's healthy, what kind of impact could that guy have on an offense, especially an offense that has Jay Cutler at quarterback and Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey at receiver?
He was a good receiver. You know, people in Pittsburgh will forever remember the catch he made in the Super Bowl. But that was, what was that? That's 6 years, five and a half, six seasons ago. I don't know what he has left. He's had a bunch of injuries. I know he didn't play a lot. He was up and down in New York. So I don't know what he can do for the Bears at this point. You know, the Steelers, when they dealt him to the Jets, they were fed up. They got rid of him for a fifth-round draft pick. So I don't know if he, you know, I guess they're not paying him a whole lot, so they don't have a lot invested in him the way the Jets did. But I don't know if he can help anybody at this point. Maybe a little bit, but I don't see him as the prime he was in his prime as he was when he was here.
The Steelers got Santonio Holmes with a first-round pick. Since then, though, they've been able to find some gems later in the draft. Mike Wallace was a third-rounder. Emmanuel Sanders was a third-rounder. Antonio Brown, two-time team MVP, was a sixth-rounder. Sanders and Wallace now gone. They got their paydays elsewhere. What about these mid-round guys like Martavis Bryant, Marcus Wheaton? Who do you see stepping up and emerging as that complement to Brown?
I think Marcus Wheaton right now, Mike. he has looked good so far. He looked good last year as a rookie, and then he broke some fingers and had some, you know, twice broke his finger and had surgery on it and only caught six passes and wasn't involved that much in the offense. This year he's going to start. He's going to take that Emmanuel Sanders spot. And, you know, while we haven't seen it from him in a real game yet, I think he can be at least the equal to Sanders. Justin Brown's a slot guy. He's a tall guy. He's kind of competing with Lance Moore, the free agent they signed from the Saints, to be that slot guy. Martavis Bryant he's flashed some good things, but I just don't think he's there yet where they have confidence in him right now, Mike.
I keep seeing that the Steelers are going to put the proverbial pedal to the metal this year, no huddle offense. Do you expect that to be used, and if so, how extensively?
Yeah, this is the little boy who cried wolf for so many years, and everybody kept saying, oh, they're going to use it this year, they're going to use it this year. They kept saying it, and they just use it the way they always used it, you know, if they needed a change of pace or they fell behind. This year there's a more concerted effort. The proof came second half of last season, Mike, when not only did they go 6-2, the offense and Ben were more efficient. Ben was sacked only 7 times in 7 games. He's never been sacked fewer over that amount of time. This is a guy who's been sacked several times in the high 40s for a season. He played every snap last year. He loves the offense. Todd Haley's willing to let him take the lead and do it. And the plan was to do it for a first half tonight, really use it extensively on the road. And since it sounds like Mike Tomlin is going to play those fellas tonight, I would think they're going to still stick to that plan. So, yeah, I think we're going to see the no huddle more this year.
What happens with Roethlisberger long term? I don't think anybody expects he won't be a member of the Steelers when he retires, although we've seen guys like Peyton Manning and Brett Favre finish their careers not with the team they began with. Roethlisberger's making $12.1 million this year, $11.6 million next year. No further negotiations on a contract extension now. He says he's already giving a hometown discount. When will he get his new contract, and what do you think the average will be when it happens?
I think he'll get it next year. I think you're looking at $20 million. You know, for him to take a whole lot less than that would be, you know, kind of a slap in the face for what both he's met here and, you know, I think what he's still capable of doing. He looks great this year. I mean, everybody has said that. He's looked real sharp in the preseason games and in practices. He buckled down. He worked out probably harder than ever. He told me his right arm's stronger than it ever has been. And I just think that they learned their lesson a long time ago when they let Neil O'Donnell go, and they struggled with quarterbacks all the way up until they got Ben. So I think as long as, you know, he still has a good season this year, I think it's going to get done.
Yeah, if you let a quarterback go, you have to answer the next question, who's the quarterback going to be? And there aren't great quarterbacks just hanging around waiting for someone to offer them a little bit of money to come in and play. Flip it over to the defensive side of the ball real quickly. What do you make of the defense? I get the sense that they're going to be better than they've been, that maybe they're starting to get that swagger back, the steel curtain feel back. What do you expect from the defense this year?
I'm skeptical on it, Mike. I really am. I mean, I'm not saying it won't be staying there. Just re-signed Brett Kiesel. That shows you that maybe they weren't real happy with some of their defensive ends. And, you know, I don't think anybody likes their cornerbacks right now. And if they don't get the pressure on the quarterback, those corners are going to be exposed again. And, you know, the big thing, and they've been working on it all year, they want to get more heat on the quarterback. And they haven't been able to do that the last 3 years. It's been a real failure for them as they've gone through injuries to Lamar Woodley and the loss and injuries and loss of James Harrison and Jarvis Jones playing as a rookie not very well. And so they're counting on Jones and Lamar, or listen, Jason Worlds, to step up, put some heat on a passer. And, yeah, Shazier, too. Ryan Shazier is probably going to be involved in that as well.
If the defense is going to be successful this year, who's the key player that needs to step up?
I think Jarvis Jones. I really do. He's the right outside linebacker, the prime pass rushing spot. He had one sack last year. Again, they've never started rookies out there, so I give them that a little bit, you know, a learning year. But they really, really need him to step up. Worlds looks good. Worlds looks like he's going to step right in and pick up where Lamar Woodley left off as a good, strong side pass rusher. But they need the other guy to do it, too.
Playoffs this year for the Steelers, yes or no?
Does 8-8 make the playoffs, Mike?
You never know. It just might.
You know, there's three-team race. It's Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore. Someone's going to have to win that division. And the Steelers, if you look at it, really are set up early part of the schedule to get off to a fast start. You're going to put my hand to the fire, aren't you? Yeah, I'll say they'll make the playoffs, maybe 9-7.
Yeah, I think they're going to make it. I just don't see this franchise going 3 years in a row without making it. I know it's happened before, but they got very close last year. I think they're going to push it through this year, and I think they could be one of those sneaky teams in the postseason that could cause some trouble as long as they don't have to play the Patriots. I don't think they match up well with them, but I think they could make it interesting. Well, you always make it interesting for us, Ed. Enjoy the game tonight in Philadelphia, and don't take a ride from Le'Veon and LeGarrette if they offer it.
No, I don't think they'll be offering anyway.
All right, see you, buddy.
Thanks.
All right, there he is, Ed Bouchette. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he's been covering that team a long time. He does a great job. Got the Dick McCann Award this year from the Hall of Fame, and well-deserved for him. When we come back, we'll go to the other coast, the San Francisco 49ers. And you know what? I just thought of this. The Steelers have a problem with grass. 49ers have a problem with grass. A bigger problem with grass. A problem that affects the entire team. We'll talk to Matt Maiocco of CSN Bay Area about that when we come back. This is PFT Live. The San Francisco 49ers have christened their new stadium unofficially. On Wednesday, Coach Jim Harbaugh wanted to do something other than christen it. He pulled the team off the field, according to Matt Maiocco of CSNBayArea.com. Poor field conditions, poor turf. You don't want to continue every tradition from Candlestick Park, especially the quality of the turf. Joining us now to talk about that and all other issues relating to the 49ers, Matt Maiocco of CSN Bay Area. How did this happen, that the turf was in such bad condition on Wednesday, Matt?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they had practiced there a couple times previously, and, you know, you could tell that there were some issues with it, but it wasn't to the point where it was unsafe. In fact, the very first practice out there, Jim Harbaugh had his players go at about half speed because they weren't certain about the field conditions, but it seemed to hold up okay. And at the game on Sunday against the Broncos, there were times where you'd see that the field kick up a little bit, but again, it didn't seem to be a big issue as far as the footing. I mean, it did appear soft and that it hadn't taken firm root yet, but it didn't seem too bad. But then yesterday, it was horrendous. I mean, there were divots out there pretty much on any kind of routine play, and then I was watching the pass rush drills, defensive linemen one-on-one against offensive linemen, and big divots were coming up. And you could tell that, you know, the 49er executives, Trent Baalke, Parag Marathe, the groundskeeper, you know, they were huddled on the side of the field, and Trent Baalke seemed particularly on edge while this practice was going on. And then there was a play where just a simple out route that Stevie Johnson ran, and there was no contact with anybody, and he just went down hard. And it was right after that, less than an hour into the scheduled 2.5-hour practice, that Jim Harbaugh brought the team together and said, let's go back to our practice fields on the other side of the facility. And the team exited through the south tunnel and went there and continued their practice while several thousand fans in the stands were left going, okay, what's going on here? But it was pretty clear that for safety concerns that they had to get off that field.
So what is being done to remedy the situation at the so-called Field of Genes?
So right now they've torn up a good portion of the field, probably between the numbers and the hash marks. They've torn up all that sod, so that's just dirt there right now from goal line to goal line, and they're going to be re-sodding that. And I know that, you know, the obvious question is, hold it now. They installed that turf in mid-April. It hasn't taken root. Why would they re-sod it now? From what I understand, what happens is, you know, when it was laid down in April, you're talking about probably an inch or two of dirt on the bottom of the grass. And so what they can do to make it more stable for the short term is make a deeper cut. So maybe they're attaching 4 inches of dirt to the grass that's going to be laid down. And the goal is to have a safe environment for both teams on Sunday. What's interesting, too, is that, you know, part of the reason they use this strain of grass is called Bandera Bermuda is because they expect to have a lot of events on this field. Well, the first regular season game is September 14th, Sunday Night Football against the Bears. But between the game Sunday against the Chargers and September 14th, the 49ers have scheduled at Levi's Stadium two high school football games, which will be played as a doubleheader on August 29th, and an international soccer game, Mexico against Chile, on September 6th. So I think the 49ers are going to have to reassess after this game on Sunday whether it's a good idea to have those games on that field.
How confident are they that these measures are going to fix the problem? Is there a roll of the dice dynamic to any of this?
I think they feel confident that for the short term it can be done and not have much of an impact on Sunday. And to that, they kind of point to stuff that's happened. You know, for instance, the BCS championship game was played on a whole new field at the Rose Bowl 5 days after the Rose Bowl game. And then I believe in Glendale, that stadium was redone for their bowl game there. So I think that they feel like it's workable, it's doable, it'll be a safer environment on Sunday than it certainly was yesterday. But then you have to look at, okay, so much use. You know, those two football games, high school football games, the soccer match. Is it wise to keep using this field when it clearly, hasn't been able to stand up to, at this point, one kind of minor concert, you know, with not a whole lot of people, but it did take place on the field, John Legend and a lot of dignitaries took part in that Levi Stadium opening event. And then there was a soccer match, MLS soccer match, and then this football game. And clearly the football game on Sunday was the one that left this field in a state of disrepair.
What do you make of quarterback Colin Kaepernick talking about his foot injury last year, that it was worse than advertised, it hampered him more than people knew? Why does that come out now, and is he trying to excuse what many thought was kind of a poor performance, or at least average performance by him during the regular season in 2013?
Yeah, he had always deflected it and not talked much about it and never used it as an excuse. Why would he do it now? I would guess just so that people would know that. I mean, it probably, you know, kind of kills a competitive athlete to think that, you know, to have people think that everything is 100% when in your mind you know that there were certain restrictions you had because of an ailment. So, you know, clearly he and Jim Harbaugh didn't want to talk about the injury during the season. I mean, much the same way that Justin Smith didn't talk about a shoulder injury that bothered him all of last season. And you don't want to give the other team a competitive edge to know that, hey, my foot's bothering me. Or in the case of Justin Smith, my shoulder is jacked up and is going to require surgery. So I think, you know, now that information cannot be used against him by another team, and now that foot is healthy, I think that's probably the reason why Colin decided to reveal exactly what was going on with that foot last season.
When will a decision be made by the league office about the suspension to be imposed on linebacker Alden Smith?
It should be any day. In fact, I mean, I was expecting, you know, maybe today or tomorrow. Somebody else told me that it might not be today or tomorrow, just because the 49ers play on national TV on Sunday, and so they don't necessarily want that entire broadcast to be to have the Alden Smith situation being talked about. Well, now that they have the the stadium, the turf issue, I think is going to be a good portion of what the broadcast is going to be focused on. You know, I don't know that that's accurate or that's why the NFL would wait, but today, on Thursday, this is the 2 weeks now since Commissioner Goodell met with Alden Smith in New York City. And so, I mean, I think anything at this point, it could come down at any minute. And, I mean, the 49ers want it to happen. They want it to happen, you know, soon, so they know what to expect. And I think it's only fair that a decision is made in prompt terms. Well, it's past the point of being prompt at this point, 2 weeks later. But, they do expect a decision very soon.
So it goes from being a topic that the NFL wouldn't want to be the focal point of the nationally televised game to a welcome diversion from all the talk about the turf problems for the San Francisco 49ers. Just speaking about problems generally for the 49ers, I've detected in some circles a sense of concern, even borderline panic by some fans, that the 49ers don't look like they're going to be very good this year. I don't buy into that yet. What's your sense on whether or not there is panic or whether there should be?
Well, I think there's concern in the organization that, you know, that the offense has scored 3 points in two games, but I don't think there's panic. And the reason there should be no reason for panic is that in those two games, Colin Kaepernick has played two series. Frank Gore has caught or has touched the ball twice. They haven't used Bolden, Crabtree, Davis in any kind of really form. I think Bolden caught one pass in the game. They're getting an offensive lineman back. Now Alex Boone remains a holdout, so that's a concern that's going to spill into the regular season. But I don't think there's any concern from that standpoint. And defensively, you know, Patrick Willis hasn't stepped on the field. Their starting defensive line hasn't stepped on the field. Their best cornerback hasn't stepped on the field. I think where the concern is, though, but I think this is the current concern with every contending team, is what happens if your starting quarterback goes out. And what we've seen from the first two games where those reserve quarterbacks have played a lot more than the starter is that they don't have anybody reliable behind Kaepernick. You know, Blaine Gabbert was brought in. He has not looked good. Josh Johnson trying to earn a job with the 49ers, something he was unable to do in 2012 when he was cut in the preseason. He's been up and down. So I think that's more the concern. But basically, the 49ers that we've seen that have scored 3 points in two exhibition games in just a few days are going to be former 49ers.
Yeah, and Jim Harbaugh has shown that he can work magic with quarterbacks. No magic worked yet with Blaine Gabbert, and it could be that Gabbert is going to wash right out of the league. Well, we'll see what happens with the 49ers. I still think they're going to be very good, but it'll be very interesting to see what happens, especially if the grass is going to be coming up in big chunks and players are going to be falling down. Another reason to watch the preseason game coming up on Sunday. Matt, thanks as always for your time. We'll talk to you again soon, buddy.
All right, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Matt Maiocco, CSNBayArea.com. It's the first time we've had two guests in a while. And I apologize, we didn't give you the opportunity to chime in today. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow. We'll probably do it tomorrow. We usually do it on Fridays. Anyway, we usually do it every day. We just didn't do it today because there's a lot of neat stuff happening. And we're getting closer and closer to the really neat things that will happen. Yeah, I can't think of anything better to say than neat. But it is pretty neat or cool or groovy, depending upon your demographic. The NFL season will be back in 2 weeks when we go to Seattle. Packers at Seahawks. We'll be broadcasting Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of that week from CenturyLink Field in Seattle. It's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. Hopefully you'll be checking us out before then. Don't take 2 weeks off. There's still a lot to do. Week 3 of the preseason starts tonight. Steelers-Eagles. Check us out around the clock at ProFootballTalk.com. Tune in NBCSN at 6 o'clock Eastern Time tonight for Pro Football Talk. We'll see you back here again tomorrow. Have a great day.